This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Good morning, everyone. I've met many of you last month at the Landmark Women Lecture, and so welcome to the very popular series today featuring the fabulous Susie Beaver from Beaver Galleries. Welcome to all of the familiar faces and also to many of you that may be new, including my mother Anne, who's sitting in the third row there. Welcome and thank you for coming out again on a sunny but still quite cool morning. Before I introduce Helen Conn, I just wanted to remind you of a little bit of housekeeping. Those of you that come often know that this session is going to be recorded. So if you could turn your mobile phones off if you have one. And also we'll be having questions, but please wait for the microphone, which I'll bring to you so that everybody can hear your questions. And finally, just as a little bit of promotion, for those of you that may not have had the newsletter recently, the Friends are very excited to be scheduling some programs over the winter months that will be coming up in our What's On calendar, and they include some curatorial talks through the Lagmeta Oz exhibition with John O'Lanine and also the Walpuri exhibition in August. So have a look at your newsletters, but if you're not familiar with the dates, certainly please give me a call and I can book you into those functions. Also, we're very excited about the opening of the Spirited exhibition in September, and we're scheduling some events around that. So any questions, just give me a call. But not to detract from today's speaker, welcome Susie, and I'll introduce our Assistant Director, Helen Conn, to introduce Susie today. Thank you.
Just make sure I get this at the right height. Can everybody hear me? I'd like to welcome you all here this morning to the National Museum again. We've got another, obviously, very special guest today, Susie Beaver, to speak to us as part of this great Landmarks Women series, which has, of course, been going for quite a few years. Susie Beaver first developed her love and interest in the arts during her university days and started working in the arts administration area immediately after she had finished doing her degree and went off to work in the Australia Council in arts administration. She then furthered her experience and headed overseas to work for various arts organisations in London and Europe, and then came back to Sydney before moving to Canberra in 92, where she began the Beaver Galleries with her husband Martin, who is also here today, who I'd like to welcome, and in between raising two children. The wonderful Beaver Galleries, I think it's fair to say, is an institution in Canberra. Whilst we call ourselves a cultural institution, I do believe that the Beaver Galleries is one as well. It is the largest commercial gallery in the capital and exhibits work of contemporary Australian artists in a variety of mediums, including paintings, sculpture, jewellery, glassware and ceramics. But Susie's involvement goes beyond running the Beaver Galleries into the work that she does around the community here in the ACT. Her local community involvement is well known, I think, through her work as president and as a board member of CAPO, the Capital Arts Patrons Organisation, and on the ACT Committee of Musica Viva, as the ACT member of the Craft Reference Group for the Visual and Crafts Board, Visual Arts and Crafts Board of the Australia Council, and also, interestingly, as a board member of a firm which raises funds for mental health research. I'd like you to welcome Susie to the stage, and I'm sure she's going to give us a very interesting talk about her life and the work and the passion that is behind Susie Beaver. Thank you, Susie.
Well, good morning, everyone. Is the sound okay? Great. Well, Helen, thank you so much for that very warm introduction, and Francis, for you inviting me today. And thanks to the Friends of the National Museum for inviting me to talk. I feel delighted and somewhat overwhelmed at being included with such an interesting and diverse group of extraordinary women who have spoken previously to you as part of this series. You travel through your life and you do things from day to day. You make choices. And then when you are asked to talk about your life as a whole, you stop and you look back and you realise that certainly for you it's been very interesting, and that you hope you have made and continue to make the most of any opportunities that come your way. My husband and business partner, I need to say, Martin, and I own and run Beaver Galleries and Deakin, as you know. We work with many talented and extraordinary contemporary Australian artists from Canberra and around Australia. But I'll talk more about the gallery when I get to that point and how we ended up being in Canberra 22 years ago. So here's a potted version of my life so far, which starts with my family. My parents were both born in Adelaide. My father, Murray Gordon, was the only child to Irish and English parents, and his father, my grandfather, died before I was born. This left my Irish grandmother a rather sad and lonely woman who pined for Ireland all her life, even though she left there when she was just 19 years old. My mother, Anne Berry, was one of three girls born into a significant South Australian family whose forebears had been on the first ship with Colonel Light arriving in Adelaide in 1836. They were a family of pioneers who worked hard developing the first transport systems in their new state. They were the patrons of explorers into outback Australia, and they made a significant contribution to the development of South Australia for several generations. My mother's father was a prominent architect in Adelaide, and my grandmother was involved in community charities and social events. As children, my two sisters and I were brought up hearing stories from our proud grandparents about the value of family and the rich history of our forebears. My mother's side of the family was full of inspiring women. My great-grandmother was one of 16 children born in a very small town in outback South Australia. And her mother, having already bore these 16 children, decided to adopt another four parentless children in the town. My great-aunt, who I was lucky enough to know for many years and who was a very special person in my life, was a colonel in the British Army in charge of women troops in the Middle East. Also, of course, there was my grandmother and my mother too, so when I think of landmark women, I have many inspiring women to live up to. My parents met when they were both 17. My father played the organ at the Adelaide Cathedral, and my mother and her family were heavily involved in the activities of the church. Our parents were in love with each other their whole lives, and their relationship and devotion to each other was just extraordinary. My father was shy, gentle, intelligent and sensitive, and was swept up by my mother's warmth, her sense of humour, her large family, her laughter and her care. My father gained degrees in music, English and the law, and my mother trained as a typist. After marrying and having their first child, my oldest sister Penny, Mum and Dad decided that they had outgrown Adelaide and they moved to Melbourne, where I was born. There, my father started his career working for the ABC. Not long after I was born, we moved to Sydney, and some years later, my younger sister Prue was born. Our little family was now complete. So I was brought up in Sydney, but we regularly travelled in our Ford Falcon station wagon back to Adelaide and Melbourne, playing I Spy and other games to make these long road journeys go faster. My school days were very happy ones, and both my parents worked hard, with my mother also working to allow us to have as good an education as they could afford, often sacrificing things to educate their three daughters. We were blessed with a warm and loving parents, plenty of family and friends. Of course, growing up in a family of women had its drawbacks too, especially for my dad. There were plenty of family feuds, curfews that had to be ignored and broken, and much attempt at discipline. My parents brought to our lives an interest in contemporary architecture, Australian art, and they bought the odd piece when they could, books, bottling their own wine in the garage, theatre and music. When I was 10, my dad was offered a two-year contract working for the ABC in Singapore, and this was the start of my interest in and love of travel. Asia in 1969 was a wonderful place, and I still remember the first wave of heat as we descended the aircraft steps on arrival and the vibrant and often overwhelming smells of the Singapore streets. It was from my parents that I learnt the rewards of hard work, the value of a good education, the joy and enrichment of the arts, the growth one experiences through travel, the belief that you can do anything you set your mind to and that your life is what you make of it. By 1979, I had finished both school and an arts degree at university and decided that I would travel for at least a year before deciding what to do with my life. So off to Europe I headed. I was young, I was very naive. I was a little bit scared and searching for adventure and excitement. Exactly the phase where our kids are at the moment, I have to say. 12 months later, and with no money left, I returned home and spent every Saturday getting up early and trawling through the Sydney Morning Herald jobs pages, trying to find something that would interest me and that I could apply for. I was lucky enough at the age of 22 to get a job at the Australia Council, as Helen mentioned, in Sydney. It was my very first job, and they're the federal funding body for the arts and still are. As a project officer with music, visual and community arts boards, I was involved in meeting artists and arts organisations, assisting them in applying for government funds and working with a board of amazing professional artists and business people in assessing applications for funding. It wasn't always as glamorous as it sounded, though, because tea and coffee making was also on my job brief. It was, however, a fantastic first full-time job, which again allowed me to travel, this time throughout Australia, to meet and assist a wide range of artists working in many disciplines. I spent 6 to 7 years working on and off with the Australia Council, learning about arts and artists. Regularly, I would take periods of leave without pay to travel back to Europe, and I worked in arts festivals in London and Edinburgh. During one of these visits to London, I met my future husband, Martin, never realising that we would be married, have children, and run an art gallery in Canberra many years later. So I guess one way or the other, my life fell into the arts, and from there I have lived it and loved it ever since. Looking back on this, I think you realise how unexpected life can be. You make choices, not realising that one particular path will end up shaping your future. So that is the first 30 years of my life, and then comes Canberra. Now, at this particular point, I'm going to cue Francis, because I think you might need some visual distraction. So we've put together a selection of some of the diverse artwork made by some of the wonderful artists we're lucky enough to work with at our gallery. So if you want to tune out, you can simply enjoy the creativity of the artist's work being shown behind me. Thanks, Francis. Ah, there you are. So having met and lived in London for a while, Martin and I decided to move back to Australia to start our family. This was a big thing for Martin, as he lived in Europe and America for over 10 years. He has degrees in both law and commerce, and also a love and interest in the arts, which we share, obviously. Now, Beaver Galleries was actually started in 1975 by Martin's parents, and when they decided to sell the gallery in 1992, we were living in Sydney and had just had our first beautiful child, Lucy. We had an idealistic view that if we could spend 6 months travelling together before we married, and we did, combine Martin's legal and business background, my arts administration background, and both our love of the arts, then we could certainly buy and run a business together and raise children too. Consequently, we moved to Canberra with a 3-month-old child, having bought a business we really knew nothing about. How naive we were then. But I guess if you were not so naive then, we may not have embarked on this journey. Looking back now, it was much harder than we thought. For the first 15 months in Canberra, I pretty much cried most days. Sad to have left friends and family in Sydney, and like many of us, thinking we would not stay in Canberra for very long. Not only were we learning how to run our business, we were also learning how to be parents. When Lucy was 7 months old, I was pregnant with our second child, which probably also contributed to the crying every day. Our baby was due during the doctor's strike in Canberra, which you may remember in late 1993. And so after attending the opening of our Christmas exhibition on the 26th of November that year, I rather stupidly flew to Sydney with my mum and Lucy and went into labour a few hours later after arriving in Sydney. The plane trip worked. We were going to have that baby. Our gorgeous son Sam arrived that day. So now on to what a commercial gallery like ours does. Well, our job is obviously to represent the artists whom we like, admire and want to exhibit. This comes down to a very subjective view about how Martin and I want our gallery to be. We have a personal philosophy behind most things we do, and of course this has evolved over time. Martin's parents' vision for their gallery was different to ours, and if anyone has it after us, it will be different then too. Business such as our gallery cannot stand still and needs always to be able to change. Ultimately for us, it's about the quality of the work of the artists we choose to show and the diversity of the range of materials and mediums. As you can see from these beautiful images, we exhibit paintings, prints, sculpture, ceramics, glass and jewellery. It's about creating experience for people visiting the gallery. It's about educating and sharing information. We also extend our reach beyond Canberra by exhibiting our artists' work at contemporary art fairs in Sydney, Melbourne and Chicago. We need to be professional in everything we do. We need to provide great service and we try to share with our clients the passion we have for all our artists and their work. Behind all this, though, we have to run efficiently as a business so that our gallery will survive and in turn our artists will continue to be supported. I could talk much to you about the complexity of running an art gallery. I often think of that lovely analogy of the duck gliding over the pond with the feet flapping frantically below the surface. I imagine that applies to so many of us in our daily lives. And one needs for this particular job, and in no particular order, a good vision of the art that you want to show, the ability to identify and find good art, business acumen, dedicated and educated staff, a flexible, light-filled building, a good work ethic, you would know that we're open 6 days a week, fantastic artists to work with, patience, selling skills, listening skills. We have to counsel people sometimes because we're there and they want to talk to us. Social media skills, wrapping skills, tea and coffee making skills, and most of all, flat shoes. You need to know how to communicate with people. You need to like people. You need to know how to give wise counsel and how to market your business. You also need logistics experience. You need to be able to pack fragile items to be sent around the world. You need to have the ability to efficiently move through piles and piles of administration and emails. You need to know how to clean the toilets and the floors. You need empathy and so much more. Most importantly, though, I think you really need a belief in what you are doing and a passion for the work of the artists you are representing and hopefully selling. But it is also about our responsibility, and it's a big one, to the artists that we work with. Each artist is effectively their own micro-business, so every commercial gallery like ours supports many small businesses. We actually help our artists stay afloat. This is, of course, depending on the assumption that the gallery sells the work for the artist. If they do, the artist in turn supports their own practice and their families, and so it goes on. So not only do we delight for the client when we see their pleasure in purchasing a piece of art, but we also know we'll be helping an artist with their business whilst covering some of our costs too. It's a great feeling, and nothing is better than telling an artist that their work connected with a buyer and that you've made another sale for them. Our gallery represents many fantastic artists, and I think one of the reasons that we still do what we do is that we're continually inspired by the artists that we work with. This morning I'd just like to share a few of their journeys very briefly with you. Christina Cordero is a printmaker, and you've probably seen some of her images as we go by, and she's shown with our gallery for many years. She was born in Chile, but she had to flee that country with her child in 1963 during the Pinochet regime. Christina was trained as an academic and she was a sociologist, and both she and her husband were academics at the University of Santiago. The story of her literally fleeing in the night with her son to join her husband who was waiting for her in Australia is an absolutely chilling one. still gives me goosebumps actually, and one that Christina did not tell me for many years after we met. When Christina arrived in Australia, she decided to study painting and printmaking. And in 1990, she received her Diploma of Fine Arts from the National Art School in Sydney. Christina's work is characterised by the free association of ideas and interwoven narratives, and often features small boats with women on board. Her work at times suggests the romance of antique maps and folkloric illustration, and is underscored by the reality of dual histories. She's an artist with great humility, whose life is her art. Lucien Ricard is a young Tasmanian artist who was only shown with us for a few years. Her extraordinary work is marked by a sharp eye for detail, zealous imagination, and a fastidious, almost obsessive mode of execution. Lucien draws using graphite, lead pencil on drafting film. Her images are often large and hauntingly beautiful in both execution and composition. Her story with us is a really lovely one. Martin went to Hobart some years ago and went to a few little known student art shows. He saw the exquisite works that Lucien had done and tracked her down to the cafe where she worked as a waitress. We first showed her drawings in a group show at our gallery. We sold all her works. Then we gave her a solo show, and again sales were great. And last year we took her work to the inaugural Sydney Contemporary Art Fair, where all four of her large works, and we only had four, sold in the first day of the fair. That fair involved 80 of the best galleries from Australia and around the world, so it was stiff competition indeed. This year, Lucien has been invited to exhibit in Primavera at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney. This is a curated exhibition showcasing the work of just 14 young Australian emerging artists in the early stages of their career. An honour indeed for Lucien, and a great excitement for us. It's worth mentioning that she no longer works as a waitress and she works full-time as an artist. Thornton Walker is one of my very favourite artists, though of course we don't have favourites in our business. Thornton has painted for many years and he continues to challenge himself as an artist while still creating the most beautiful paintings. They are filled with strength, yet at the same time they are still. They are often meditative, but they're also full of movement. As a gallery, we have complete faith in the work that he makes. It never disappoints us, and it always engages the viewer. G.W. Bosch is a wonderful Canberra icon and also an extraordinary artist who many of you may know. She is equally skilled in moving from prints to paintings to drawings and through to sculpture. Her works are strong in meaning and show through exquisite mark-making her close and very personal relationship to the land. And finally, who could not fail to be inspired by Canberra sculptor and legend Jan Brown? She is simply an amazing woman, and even at the age of 92, she continues to work most days. Jan says of her work that it is, and quote, incidental to a lifetime journey, seeing, learning, knowing, and making. So the last 22 years have been a learning and fulfilling journey. Not only have I gained much through my job, but I've also enjoyed being involved with other areas of numerous volunteer boards. As Helen mentioned, I was involved in CAPO, also the Canberra Museum and Gallery. Tourism ACT I was involved with as well, which was an interesting experience. And I learned much from the great challenges of mental health when working with the firm and the Centre for Mental Health Research at ANU. Our wonderful children have grown up and left Canberra to pursue their own lives. Our gallery continues to survive. Martin and I, after all this, continue to be married. We continue to love living in Canberra and doing what we think we do best. Now that I'm an interstate mother, there is more time to put into our gallery and to think about where our gallery will go from here. My husband, my children, my sisters and special friends remain very important to me in the support that we all give each other. There will also be time as one gets older to think about other things that we may want to do. Our gallery has been built up and shaped by Martin and me, bringing our different skills and personalities together and creating a gallery that we feel really proud of. It would be foolish to say that it has all been easy. It hasn't at all. Life is never that simple, and nor would we want it to be. We've had to work really hard, and we will continue to do so. It's what we love. I think I'm an optimist, and I always try to look at the positive things in life. One of the most valuable things I learnt from my parents, and in particular my mum, was the value of a generosity of spirit. If I can live my life like that, both personally and professionally, I'll be very content. Thanks for listening today.
Thank you very much, Susie. That was wonderful, very inspiring. And Beaver Galleries and yourself are very landmark institutions in Canberra. So I hope you enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen. And we will take questions now, if anybody's got questions for Susie, before we go down for morning tea. Yes?
Thank you, Susie. I enjoyed that hugely. Do you seek out artists? Do they seek out you, or both?
It's a bit of both. I think artists are in the unfortunate position that there are many more artists that need galleries than galleries need artists. So we know who we... Well, we know when we know what we see that we want that person. But many, many approach us. We probably... Of the people that approach us, we probably take less than 5% of what we're offered. It's a really big job sifting through information and emails from artists, but it's a job we try and do. We don't always do it as efficiently as we should. And then serendipitously you get approached by artists that you think will give your gallery something that you haven't got. So we try to choose, it's a very subjective thing, we try to choose artists that are giving us something that another artist that we already have in our group isn't giving us. So we don't want to compete within the group with each other, but we want it to be a kind of diverse and interesting range of artists.
Thank you, Susie. That was fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges you might be faced promoting Australian artists overseas? And that's assuming that I think you do promote our artists overseas, and how successful you are with that.
Okay, thank you. We go to, well, for the last 14 years, we've taken work to an art fair in Chicago. It's a three-dimensional fair, so as you know, the gallery has a really strong reputation in glass and ceramics, as well as other mediums. But Australian glass in particular is very much at the forefront in the international glassmaking market. Martin has been taking work to this art fair in Chicago for a long, long time. It is a challenge. It's hugely expensive. It's all these fairs are great risk-taking events. If you cover your costs, you're lucky. And if you make a bit more on top, you're really happy. So it is a punt, and you just hope that you choose the right work. One of the most challenging ones for us was a fair that started 4 days after 9/11. And by then, our artwork was already on the plane. And everyone was committed to that fair in Chicago. It was a really challenging time. Nobody wanted to spend money over there. But the American market is such a big one that we really think this is a great way of promoting those artists in particular. So it's a challenge. It's a good one. It's really important that we get our business out of Canberra. That's why the Sydney and Melbourne fairs are really important to us. We have clients in those places, obviously, and when they come to Canberra, it's great. They're always surprised at how big our gallery is, because galleries in Sydney and Melbourne aren't always as they don't always have the opportunity of being as physically large as ours. So the fairs are important, but they're risk-taking, but it's something we feel we need to do.
Hi, I come from a background of textile art, mixed media, that type of thing. Do you ever consider that type of artwork?
Look, that's a tricky question, that one. I think we do show textiles. In fact, I have a Jennifer Robertson woven scarf on today, who's a Canberra textile artist. We probably don't exhibit much of that work. Again, we don't exhibit much photography either. There comes to a point where you actually say, how many mediums can you effectively cover? And then, of course, we're asked things like, will you show overseas artists? We say, no, it's only Australian artists. So despite the fact that that's a really fascinating area, I'm not convinced that we will move into other areas. We probably will stick to the areas that we know about and we want to deal with at this time.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to know whether you've ever been tempted to indulge yourself in making artwork or your children.
I'm not that clever, I have to say. Okay. No, never ever. I really admire people who do it. And lots of people say, oh, you run a gallery, are you an artist too? But we think we're better organising artists rather than doing it. Martin is much more likely to do drawing and things like that. I've never actually had much of an artistic bone in my body at all. So I kind of think I'm better organising them and visually putting things together rather than doing it. But I've actually thought about doing printmaking at some point because I'd love to know about the complexities of printmaking with a hands-on thing, but I'm not convinced that I would do it very well, actually.
Hello, thank you very much for that very interesting insight into running a gallery.
Thank you.
How well is Australian art accepted overseas? Is it sought out, or are we still breaking into the market?
Well, in terms of three-dimensional work, and in particular glass, we are really sought out. And this is because this is a new area, new as in 20 or 30 years old, the glassmaking area, it's really well deserved, you know, the reputation is well deserved and very highly regarded and well sought out. And pardon the expression, very good bang for buck. I mean, Australian art, glass art is still, even though it seems extraordinarily expensive on the world market, it's actually, it's good value. In terms of contemporary paintings, prints, it's not an area that we get involved in. We don't compete with international markets in that area. So there will, of course, be some artists that you that have big international reputations, and that's on an individual basis rather than anything else. So we kind of we don't take work to international art fairs that are two-dimensional paintings, prints. I think there will certainly be Australian artists that will have international reputations. I think a lot of people that come from overseas and come certainly visit our gallery, we have visitors from all over the world, actually think that the quality of what they see in a contemporary art market is fantastic. We certainly hold our own.
Thank you. What sort of interest do you get from national institutions and the Australian government in the exhibitions you have?
Oh, good question. Well, we're kind of fortunate to be in Canberra, I have to say, because one of the really valuable things about here is that it does give curators the opportunity to come. You know, they just, if they're really interested, they can jump in their car and be with you in 10 minutes. So we do sell to the National Gallery. There's regular, we've actually had quite a good year this year. We must have been showing really good things this year. There's a couple of things pending, which I won't jinx by talking about them, but we do get interest and support from mostly the National Gallery, I have to say. I think one of the interesting things too, that's sort of a bit of a segue to that, is that artists often think that Canberra is a little bit too small a place to consider showing, and then when they show here, they actually realise that their work is exposed to a lot of people that would never get to see their work if they were in a big city. And, in fact, one of our artists, whom I talked about today, said that we sell more in our gallery for him than a really significant Paddington gallery ever sold for him. And I think that's really interesting, that they can come to a place that the population seems smaller, but their reach is actually much bigger. And part of that is the fact that curators and from the National Gallery, amongst others, can come to see what we're showing. So that's a really valuable thing. We don't tend to sell a lot to the other state galleries. I think they tend to be supporting the galleries around them. But because of the National Gallery, Parliament House Art Collection has supported our artists quite a lot over the years too. So, yeah, it's a... It's a good place to be from that point of view. For some years, for 5 years, we had a contract with the federal government to provide all the gifts for Prime Minister and Cabinet. It was a pretty extraordinarily interesting 5 years. It was a lot of hard work. We had to ask to be terribly creative at times. There is a very funny story where Martin was working on a Saturday and the Prime Minister's office rang and said, quick, Diana has just had a baby, as if we didn't know that was going to happen for 9 months. Was it Diana? It was Princess Diana, wasn't it? Oh, that's right, Mary, Princess Mary. Sorry, wrong generation. And we need to give a gift. And have you got some ideas? Because we didn't just source artist work. We actually had to come. We actually went outside our boundaries, and in our background, we were sorting a whole lot of different gifts out from all over the place. So Martin quickly came up with a couple of first edition ideas of Snugglepot and Cuddle Pie and whatever, sourced around for first editions. And then the Prime Minister's office forgot to tell us, actually, that they'd chosen one of those. They announced it before we had the book. And so we had to actually... And by that time, all the books, the first editions, had actually, 10 minutes afterwards, been snapped up by other people, because they thought that was a really lovely idea. So we had to fly one in from New Zealand, we found. And that was an interesting story. But we did sell a lot of Australian artists' works to the federal government through that gift program. But it's a tendered program. So they have to, an organisation gets tendered for that job. But we do have ministers' assistants rush in saying, he's going at 10 o'clock tomorrow, she's off at 3 tonight, what have you got, 3 this afternoon, what have you got to do? So, yeah, we have provided a lot of gifts in those areas. More the shop things than the gallery things, I should say.
Okay, will you join me again in thanking very warmly Susie for coming in today and appearing at Landmark Women? Thank you, Susie, and thank you everyone for coming.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.